You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis. We're starting today on the stoop of an apartment complex on busy Motor Avenue in West Los Angeles.
Hello.
Hi.
Amelie Gustafson and Lori Daniels met up to give each other a couple of their possessions. Two masked strangers meeting up for a socially distanced exchange of their belongings, free of charge, no strings attached.
Oh, I'm picking up a bracelet that is handmade by this lady right here. I'm so excited.
For Amelie, a bracelet. For Lori, some wire storage shelves. They met on Facebook in their neighborhood Buy Nothing group, which is exactly what it sounds like. Neighbors offering up their half-used bag of rice, or their couch, or their toddler's outgrown clothes. The only rules? Don't give away anything illegal, and everything is free.
I have, you know, put up basically everything you can think of. Anything from baby clothes to lots of kitchen stuff to a dresser. You know, there's just everything.
Over the past few weeks in our series Wasted, we've talked about new and innovative ways to deal with waste, from packaging to greenhouse gas emissions to, well, poop even. But what if the most effective solution to waste is also the least innovative? Today, in our series' final episode, KCRW's Francis Anderton and Kaylee Wells explore the environmental impact of simply buying less stuff.
Hey, I'm Kaylee Wells. So, Francis.
Yes, Kaylee?
Think for a minute about all the stuff that you waste when you have a baby.
Oh, yes, I remember it well. I did, in fact, have one baby. And I certainly recall that you somehow acquire a whole bunch of stuff that you use for a very short time, and then you toss it out. Onesies, car seats, strollers, on and on.
Well, Liesl Clark and Rebecca Rockefeller have both been in your shoes. They are moms in Seattle, and 12 years ago, they started swapping supplies when they were raising their own two children, and that got them thinking.
You know, we literally asked ourselves, could we try an experiment here where we ask our neighbors to buy nothing. When you are in need of something, let's say some, you know, if you'd like to get some plastic toys for your kids, there is a lot of plastic that's washing up on our shores. Can we stave off the production of these plastics, and can we encourage people to actually ask within their community for those items that they would otherwise be going to, you know, the nearest box store to purchase?
They called it Buy Nothing. And it's not just baby stuff. It's just about anything you can think of. It's a classic example of one person's gently used trash becoming another's greatly appreciated treasure.
Almost before the two of us could stick a post in there, we had 300 members, and then we had 1,000, and then we had 2,000.
Okay, so Kaylee, this sounds great, but it also sounds to me rather like Craigslist, where you can also exchange free stuff.
Yeah, but it's more than that. It's a growing community of people bound together by a powerful sense of mission. Liesl says that's why she started it back in 2013.
In the end, it might be the stuff that brings you to the groups, but it's the people that keeps you there. There's all that sort of magic that happens, and it is. It's like a weaving of a web, and it gets tighter and tighter. And then you look around and you realize we can do a lot with this.
And when she says web, she means an expanding community. Buy Nothing took off.
Especially, we should say, in rather affluent neighborhoods.
In Southern California alone, there are now more than 360 active chapters, and there are more than 1.5 million members in thousands of groups across 30 countries.
Which is one big global web. Now, we should add here that when we say buy nothing, we don't mean literally buy nothing. They want to change one's instinct about what to do when you need something new.
And that led us to want to find ways to change people's behavior around their stuff. And we worked on that from a couple of different angles over the years. And we finally realized that it's much easier to inspire lasting behavioral change in people when you come from a point of joy and abundance than when you come from a place of shaming lectures or a feeling of scarcity.
So as I understand it, and I certainly don't want to be the person that gives the shaming lecture, but what they're trying to take on here is that gifting stuff reduces the waste of mass consumption.
Exactly. Clothes, furniture, appliances, so-called durable goods, stuff that's supposed to last. We toss nearly 350 pounds of it per person per year, and that's nearly six times worse than it was 60 years ago. Which is why we're seeing groups like these trying to change that. And the people doing it know it's not a new idea. Just ask Michelle Weiner of the Buy Nothing group in Culver City.
You know, it's kind of an old-fashioned thing. The kids were asking me, is this a revolution? Do you feel like a revolutionary? And the answer is yes and no. Yes, we are doing something that's very counterculture. We're not just throwing things away. But no, because this is what people used to do on a regular basis. They would always repair things and never throw things away.
Buy Nothing groups are popping up in neighborhoods like West LA, the Valley, places where residents in need of new furniture might not first think to ask their neighbors for a used one.
And this takes us to something else that is going on within the community of people who are choosing to try and buy nothing or as little as possible, and that's repair. Kaylee, you checked out something called the Westside Repair Cafe. Tell us all about that.
That's right. I actually did that right before the pandemic hit, when it was still acceptable to gather. A few times a year, back in the old days, people file in with torn clothes and broken toasters and bent jewelry clasps, and they get them fixed for free by community volunteers like Kim Hudson.
What are you repairing right now?
A sweater. The collar was damaged and coming apart, and so now the person will get more life out of it.
Hudson brought several pairs of ski pants to be fixed herself, and she says she got into repairing her belongings to decrease her environmental impact.
My main purpose of this is to keep things out of the landfill, because the amount of clothing that this country wastes is just unbelievable.
That's certainly true. We're talking about the problem of fast fashion.
Exactly. I met another woman, Michelle Shea, who's created an entire operation while she's been working at home during the pandemic that she runs out of the spare guest room in her apartment.
These are obviously the shoes right here. This section right here, these are pants and shorts size 0 to 6.
She calls it the Buy Nothing Boutique, and just about every day she has a couple people from the neighborhood file into her apartment and drop off a bag of clothes or shop for something new. All free, of course.
That we're upcycling clothing, we're reusing it, we're reducing landfill waste. People are always excited to get new-ish things, even though it's not brand new clothing, it's new to them. So I feel like that's a good way to be environmental.
Amelie Gustafson joined her local Buy Nothing group a year ago, and she says since then, it's inspired her to start treating her stuff differently.
I take care of things even more now because I know that I want to give it to somebody else.
Michelle Shea has seen the same trend.
The mindset is contagious because it's all about giving. It kind of snowballs into people wanting to be more giving and more generous.
Yeah, the giving and generous part is very interesting, but Kaylee, what's really so fascinating about this Buy Nothing group is that it does seem to be causing us to think about capitalism. I mean, the way we operate is by buying and selling new stuff. And this is raising a question about whether that's how we want to go on.
Yeah, it's definitely changing the way that we're thinking about capitalism, but I reject the premise that that's bad. I think that we've uncovered in this series so many problems that come along with the model of capitalism that we've adopted over the past even just 50, 60 years. So is this group of people that have kind of established themselves as a counterculture really causing harm or just bringing us back to a way of living that we adopted for centuries before this?
The way of living where we pass stuff on. And by the way, I agree with you, Kaylee, that clearly the reason why we're doing this series is because of the waste that has been produced by runaway capitalism. And what's really fascinating about the Buy Nothing group, as you have made clear earlier, is that there are now thousands of people around the world involved in these groups. And one of them, in fact, millions of people. And one of them is Adam Minter, who's an expert on global waste, author of the book Secondhand. Adam and his family live in Malaysia, and coincidentally, they are in a Buy Nothing group there. And listen to what he says about this challenge to consumerism.
These kinds of exchange groups, I think, are incredibly beneficial. Are they sufficient? Will they solve the problem? No. There is always going to be the need to buy more stuff. Things wear out. But on the other hand, it is a wonderful step forward. And I do feel like these groups impress upon their members the need to buy smarter.
And I guess we're also learning that groups like this can do something else, which is tackle the issue of waste, the excesses of our very consumerist culture, with methods that are small, you know, and that, yes, we do need big policy changes, but that's not the only approach to dealing with the issue of the fact that there is no such place as a way.
And that's kind of been my takeaway, too. We've been working on this series together for months, Frances. And while I've really enjoyed learning about all of these neat solutions to dirty problems and fascinating technologies, it leaves me wanting to do something. And I think there's a main takeaway here that there is a lot that people can do just in their own homes with the way that they think and the way that they change their behaviors to that really do add up and make a difference.
I totally agree, Kaylee.
For KCRW, I'm Kaylee Wells.
And I'm Frances Anderton. Thank you very much for listening.
Well, that's the final episode of our series, Wasted: Neat Solutions to the Dirty Problem of Waste. Now, you can listen through all the stories in that series at kcrw.com/greaterLA. And thanks to our reporters, Frances Anderton and Kaylee Wells, to Sonia Geis for editing, and to Chuck P. for mixing and sound design, and to the California Arts Council for supporting this series.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Working from home has certainly become the norm. It has for me. Maybe you're schlepping today from your dining room table instead of your desk in some office building. That means a lot of those buildings across Los Angeles are sitting empty. Offices, industrial warehouses, strip mall units. For unhoused people all across LA, what if those vacant shells, those walls and a roof could help?
You know, my mother used to say, always look for the helpers. Anybody who is coming into a place where there's a tragedy. Because if you look for the helpers, you'll know that there's hope.
Rose Rios is trying to turn empty buildings in her neighborhood into homeless shelters. A story that's been chronicled in the LA Times. She's the founder of Cover the Homeless Ministry. And she's with us right now to get some people into shelters. Ma'am, thank you for joining us. Thank you for all that you're doing.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
You have lived in South LA all your life. You're obviously talking about the issue of homelessness in your neighborhood and how you've seen it change over the course of your life. I mean, tell me about what you've seen. And is it worse? What are you seeing on the streets?
Well, it's worse because back when I grew up, they had homeless people, but it wasn't as bad as it is now. Now, it's just homeless is everywhere. It's way out of hand. You know why? Because nothing has been done about it.
When did you get involved in helping your neighbors who are unhoused?
Well, my mom and my daddy was a preacher, and my mom was a missionary. And I used to go out with them feeding the homeless.
When you talk about putting people into empty buildings, there are a lot of folks working from home, as I mentioned, and I wonder, you know, what empty buildings are you talking about, and how do you convince the owner of that building, or how do you buy a building?
some of those buildings been empty since I was a kid, and they still empty. And those buildings definitely can be used to house the homeless. And this is what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to get in contact with some of the people who owns the building. I'm having a lot of trouble finding out who even owned the buildings. It's one building on Vernon and Avalon, been empty since I was a kid. It was an old, right now they say it's a historical building. I don't know how it's going to be a historical building because the homeless people are sleeping right on the side of the building. So if I can find somebody to help me buy the building, that's the whole thing. It's just finding somebody that can be able to help me, give me some of the money so we can find the building. And then we can get the homeless people. It won't be no problem filling that building up because we're definitely going to get buses, and we're going to be driving around asking the homeless people to come into our shelter. And not only are we going to help the homeless people, we're going to help the poor because South Central Los Angeles is one of the poorest area in the nation. And we're going to have a soup and cornbread kitchen where everybody can come and eat who don't have nothing to eat. They can come right there and have soup and cornbread.
Yes, ma'am. How do you do that? How do you get the money to do that? Is the city helping you? Is the county helping you?
Well, hopefully, I believe, I know Kern Price said he was going to help because he's really dedicated to the homeless. He has a wonderful staff, and he's a wonderful councilman. And so he's really going, he's going to help me. He said he's going to help me. How much money they going to give me, I don't know. But they said they're definitely going to help me. But I'm going to need some help for some of the people in the public. I'm gonna need help.
How do people in the public help you? If someone's listening right now and they say, I want to help Rose Rios, how do they do that?
Okay, you get in contact with us. It's Cover the Homeless Ministry. Yeah, they can go to our website. They can go to our website.
coverthehomeless.org.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Ms. Rios, I know real estate isn't cheap in Los Angeles anywhere. You're going to need a lot of money to do this. And I wonder, you know, you look at this task. I mean, it's not a task. This is a monumental, a Herculean effort that you're doing here. And do you have it in you?
Yes, yes. But see, what it is that I've been doing this for over 50 years. And I volunteered back in 2002 to go homeless voluntarily to sleep on Skid Row for 30 days. And I actually saw how the homeless people live. And it was the most painful sight that I ever seen in my life, the things that the homeless people are going through, especially women and children. They really suffer when they homeless.
What keeps you going?
People ask me all the time, how do you stand to see all these people? I mean, you see them, find them dead, and they, a lot of them are so sick. And I said, my heart is not like your heart. My heart is made of glue. It comes unglued when I see a problem. And when I do something about it, it glues back. So long as I know I'm going to do something about it, it doesn't bother me because I know I'm going to do something about it, like I'm trying to do something about it now by getting the builder so I can house these people.
Yes, ma'am. I want to thank you for your time, and God bless you for what you're doing. Rose Rios, the founder of Cover the Homeless Ministry, working to house her neighbors in South Los Angeles by reimagining vacant buildings in her community. Again, coverthehomeless.org. Ms. Rios, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Moving on now with Greater LA on KCRW. As of this week, more than 22,000 Angelenos have died from COVID-19. The destruction from the pandemic is deeply personal. So this week, on Greater LA, we're taking you beyond the statistics to bring you short stories about Southern Californians lost to the pandemic, as remembered by those who loved them. Today, the story of a retired father, educator, and community leader. Gene Gallegos of Arcadia was 80 years old when he died in September. His story now, told by his daughter, Emma.
When you read the news, when you hear people talk about COVID, you hear a lot of people write off people like my father. So, you know, my dad was someone, he was 80 years old. He was diabetic. He was in a skilled nursing facility. He had Alzheimer's. And sometimes I just hear the way that people talk about underlying conditions, and it makes me feel like they're talking about people like my dad, almost like they're disposable. And I've wondered if, you know, if we lived in a different kind of place or a different kind of society, if my dad would still be alive, you know. So, yeah. My dad was kind of an older dad. He's 80. I'm in my 30s. But he had a past life. He grew up in New Mexico and Colorado. From a very young age, he was, you know, working in fields. He grew up extremely poor. I mean, he talked about picking onions, and he could always spot what was growing in the fields. Like, just so I know he knew about all sorts of things just from his time. He'd always have stories. He was a track star, got a scholarship, went to college, and then he went into the educational field and then, you know, spent the better part of his life trying to give back to students that were like him. So yeah, he was a teacher, principal, and a college professor. And so he worked in like issues around educational equity. He was a superintendent at a time where they were looking for Latino leaders in education. I think in the 70s and 80s, they were looking for Latino leadership in some districts that needed that. Yeah, he was a superintendent in Texas, kind of outside of Corpus Christi, Colorado. He got a job at Cal State Bakersfield, and then he got tenure. So that's it's another Hispanic serving institution. He retired from Cal State Bakersfield, and so he taught educational administration, which is just kind of a fancy word for he would teach a lot of school principals. I mean, I do think of my dad as kind of like, he was, you know, that superintendent who said he was a stickler. You know, my dad was always, he was always put together. He was always very like fastidious. And I don't know, he was a tough guy too. So yeah, he was strong and athletic. And sometimes we had a difficult relationship too. So he could be difficult, but we loved each other. Yeah, there was someone who recently made superintendent, and he said that he took classes and his mom took classes, and he wondered if he could come a few minutes late. And he asked his mom, and she said, no, you can't come a few minutes late to his class. He is not, that's not going to fly in Dr. Gallegos' class. The skilled nursing facility he was at, it does seem like, I mean, I've said this, I look at it, it looks like a death camp to me. So many people have died. So many healthcare workers have had COVID. There's always cases. He had hip surgery, was walking that day, and then was in a skilled nursing facility, and he was doing rehab and just basically waiting for it to heal somewhat. And they found out that he actually did have COVID, but he had been asymptomatic at that point. It was only because they tested him that they found anything out. And it just went, it kind of happened overnight almost. It was no symptoms, no fever, nothing. And then all of a sudden it was like, he's so bad and we can't even transfer him to a hospital. Like, he's so sick, they don't even think it's a good idea to transfer him anywhere. I called a nurse and I said my goodbyes with my mom over FaceTime. My dad wasn't conscious. He seemed to jerk a little, and I'd like to think that he heard me. It was really hard to say goodbye to him over FaceTime, but I did. I told him I loved him, and he died. He died that night. That was it. It happened so fast. And it was just, it was so crazy. It just felt like he was okay. He was okay. He was okay. And then he was gone. And there was just nothing I could do about it.
Thank you.
That was Emma Gallegos talking about her dad, Gene, who died last year of COVID complications. Thanks to KCRW's Danielle Chiriguayo, who produced that tribute for us. That's going to do it for us today. Tonight, KCRW offers you live coverage of Governor Gavin Newsom's State of the State address from Sacramento. We'll be back here tomorrow. You can catch up with us anytime at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Subscribe to the podcast. Share your story with us, too, at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Jenna Cagle, Catherine Barnes, Sonia Geis, PJ Shahamet, Chuck P., Mario Saavedra, Mike Newport, Amy Taw, Phil Richards, Jody Adler, and Christian Bordahl all made today's show happen. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for being here. Take care. Thank you.